Every time I sit at my computer to write about the ordeal of the past 2 years, I find a million other things I need to do. Anything but write. But I know I need to write it to move beyond it. This ordeal won't let me go. Put another way, many caring and well-meaning people won't let me leave it behind. Perhaps it's because they never got the whole story and they haven't caught up with my recovery. They can't comprehend how the shattered woman they saw on their TV screens 2 years ago, unconscious on a stretcher, got better. Maybe they can't quite believe it. I'm hoping that telling my story will help lay it to rest, and through me, maybe I will reveal a fraction of what U.S. troops are experiencing, to say nothing of Iraqi families and anyone else who lives in a war zone. No one can be the saint worthy of all the prayers that were said for me, and the letters, notes, and emails sent to my hospital room. But I understand that I was a symbol for much of what's happening to the servicemen, to Iraqis, to loved ones, or to strangers who become as familiar as loved ones. I only wish I could be more gracious to some of the well-wishers I meet. When a well-meaning stranger chirps, "Oh, how are you?" or "Can I help you?" I sometimes snarl back, "Fine," or "No thanks." Utterly frustrated with people who still think I need help. And worse, I then have to bite my tongue when I hear their sympathetic follow-ups. "Of course you can do it yourself, dear," they say indulgently, as if to a 5-year-old who patently can't. On Memorial Day, May 29, 2006, I was the victim of a car bomb, along with my camera crew and the U.S. Army Foot Patrol my crew and I were filming. The weapon was a battered Iraqi taxi, carefully packed with some 500 pounds of explosives, with a trigger hardwired to a cell phone inside the car. Someone was watching and waiting for the right moment to dial the phone's number, complete the bomb circuit, and trigger the explosion. The taxi was parked on a street used by Iraqi patrols. An Iraqi convoy had been hit on the same street the day before. We'd come to ask people what they'd witnessed, who they'd seen, and if anything seemed suspicious or out of place. So in we walked, an entire U.S. Army foot patrol, 10 soldiers, an Iraqi interpreter, and a liaison officer, trailed by an American network TV crew, a cameraman, a sound man, and me, a reporter. We walked straight into what's called the kill zone of the ambush. The killers probably could not believe their luck. Closest to the bomb were my friends and colleagues, CBS cameraman Paul Douglas and freelance sound man James Brolin, just 10 to 12 feet away from the wired car. Next to them was the U.S. Army officer we were following, the 4th Infantry Division's Captain James Alex Funkhauser and his Iraqi translator, Sam. All four were killed, three just about instantly. With the same stubborn will he'd fought throughout his life, Paul tried to stave off his death until he lost too much blood. A soldier who had run to help stayed with Paul to the end. I only found this out later. The soldier who treated me at the site kept telling me, "Your guys are fine." The blast also killed an Iraqi man who was standing at the wrong T-stand on the wrong corner when we walked into the ambush. The explosion injured 6 other soldiers, leaving 2 of them and me with a year-long battle to heal our shattered bodies. Back in the United States, the attack made headlines. Normally, a car bomb that kills 1 U.S. soldier and wounds 6 more is a sad footnote to a newscast if it makes the cut at all. But add in a network TV crew with a female reporter on a slow news day, as U.S. holidays generally are, and you've got wall-to-wall coverage. Maybe the attention came because no network had yet lost so many employees in a single incident. And perhaps it was because, for most of the day, I had only a 50-50 chance of surviving. There was suspense. It was probably also because I'm a woman. Although women journalists and women soldiers have been in and on the battlefield for at least a couple decades, the public hasn't caught up with us yet. CBS put together a TV special called Flashpoint to tell the story of that day, how one bomb blasted through the lives of so many, including Paul's and James's families, Captain Funkhauser's wife Jennifer, and his 2 young daughters, Caitlin and Allison, and the 6 soldiers who were wounded. For U.S. troops, this event was sadly routine. As one commander later told me, just another day in Baghdad. This is the rest of my story. Helped by family, friends, loved ones, doctors, nurses, and corpsmen of unsurpassed skills, and I now realize my own will to live, I came back from near death. It meant facing the horror of two lost colleagues I considered friends, and a year-long fight to learn to walk and live on my own again. The bomb changed me, reinforcing some parts and burning away others. In many ways, this book is my attempt to put that transformation into words. One thing I know I'm not, a victim. That's what anyone is called when he or she suffers major trauma. Assault victim, car crash victim, Baghdad car bomb victim. But victims have no independence. Family, friends, and colleagues, all with goodwill, coddle you. They tend to you when you first need it, but they don't know how or when to let you out of your cotton-cushioned cocoon. It's almost as hard to prove you're not a victim as it is to recover. You have to teach those around you that when the victim overcomes the trauma, learning from it, changing from it, and moving beyond it, she becomes a survivor, physically, mentally, and spiritually. I survived. This is a survivor's tale.